Hi everyone, this is Serhat from The Curious Learners. My guest today is Lyubomila Jordanova, the founder of Plan A, which is a fascinating climate tech company. Lyubomila, it's great to finally have you here at The Curious Learners. I think we both had to reschedule a couple of times, but great to make it happen.
Yeah, pleasure to have the chance to speak to you, and I look forward to our discussion today.
Awesome. So I understand we have to execute the Plan A perfectly, almost, to save the Earth. Why is that? And what's that Plan A from your perspective?
So first of all, one clarification, it's humanity that is at stake. What we have at hand is obviously a global issue that is affecting all of us. And unfortunately, in the last few years, it has become a lot more evident across the globe for everyone that climate change exists. So the Plan A is really to be able to act on this as a team, which is combining different stakeholders, including businesses, governments, employees, and essentially enabling for all of our activities to allow us to become more sustainable, transform our economy to be more sustainable, and ultimately reduce these negative impacts that unfortunately at the moment are fastly unfolding.
There seems to be a bit of confusion as to what climate change actually is. So how do you define climate change? What's that huge problem that we are trying to attack here?
So climate change is a change in the global and also regional patterns, in particular a change apparent from mid to late 20th century, attributed largely to increased levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide produced by mainly using fossil fuels. The evidence that is out there internationally demonstrates that humans have a lot to do with this climatic change. Climate change has always existed, but how it has accelerated over the last 100 years or so is really been mainly with increase in production, increase in output from our facilities that such as factories, such as other types of electricity and also energy dependent elements of the economy. And essentially what we have at stake now is the planet becoming so warm and also so unstable in terms of different weather events that it becomes absolutely impossible to live comfortably, which is kind of already evident all across Europe with all the heat waves that we see at the moment across Europe, across Asia, across Africa, as well as all the flooding. Also, a lot of drought is being seen. So all of these extreme events are to be attributed to climate change.
How alarming is the situation? What metrics are you monitoring? Not necessarily from the perspective of Plan A as your company, which we will talk about, but as someone apparently who deeply cares about the Earth.
Well, to put it into perspective, the changes that we're observing and also experiencing now, they are not anticipated in thousands of years, and yet we're seeing them in basically periods of months or weeks. And where we've gotten to now is an increased sea level rise, land that is becoming absolutely unusable, not even for agriculture because of monocultures, because of deforestation that has also led to loss of habitats. And ultimately, all of these changes are so severe and they're so intertwined to one another, leading to this bigger problem that is climate change, that essentially to untangle them and to be able to act on them backwards, we need to essentially take all these big issues, break them down into smaller local actions, and then start responding so that the negative impacts of climate change reverse. That is not something that happens overnight in the same way that it has not happened in a few days or a few weeks for us to have gotten to this level. It has been decades and more. So essentially, the situation is beyond alarming, given we're starting to experience these changes now on a daily basis. Maybe a few years back, it was every few months, every few years. Now it's happening on a daily basis.
And is it even possible to reverse this trend? Or at best, what we could do is to stop the trend? What's the overarching goal?
Well, yes, it is possible to reverse climate change. We cannot stop the issues happening overnight, but we can slow the rate and speed of all these changes happening by reducing the emissions that we create and also by starting to create more sustainable elements to our economy so that we enable the way we've been doing stuff in the past, like the way we've been producing products, the way we've been financing, the way we have built our society, our built environment, such as buildings, to be with the sustainability principles at the get-go, to then essentially start reducing these emissions, these negative impacts that we have at the moment. if you put it into maybe even more practical perspective, you can imagine that for decades, we have been doing things in a very unsustainable manner as business makers, as different stakeholders, but businesses have a lot to do with where climate change is today. Where we need to get to is transforming all these businesses so that they start following these sustainability principles to make sure that any action that is taken from now on is less harmful to the planet. If you take a piece of food, for example, like how we eat and buy things from a supermarket, they would be packaged in plastic, they would be processed, travel from all over the world. Where we need to get to is where we buy maybe products that are local, seasonal, they're not packaged in plastic, they're transported not necessarily with fossil fuel powered vehicles and so on. So these are the kinds of ideas that we need to get in our minds and start embedding them in the way we do business.
Obviously, this is a massively global phenomenon, right? So it needs to be attacked across the globe. Yet I guess the situation and the degree of actions is widely different across different regions of the world. How wide is that gap? Is that simply a separation between developed versus developing economies, or are there additional layers that you see?
I would add there's three layers in particular related to this global yet local issue of climate change. On one hand, it's about funding. On the second level, it's about the way economies are built. So what are the building blocks of how an economy creates its value, creates its GDP? And then the final is about the way this particular economy and business that works within this economy is dependent on other countries. So if you take the first issue of financing, at the moment, financing is very unequally distributed. Climate change is being tackled all over the world. But if you look at, for example, which businesses have made pledges and have started investing in decarbonization, this is mainly in the US and in the EU. Why? Because this is the two places in this world where there's the most active set of recommendations that governments are giving, but also legislation that sets the ground for everyone to align around the same agenda. So that's the first challenge, which is financing. How do we make sure that the places which are unequally affected by climate change also get to receive more or less funding? The second challenge, which is related to the build of the economy and how a certain economy creates its GDP, is what kind of industries are actually specific to a particular country or a particular geography. In some places, the focus is more on production of physical. In other places, it's mainly about financing, like, for example, the UK, if you take into account. For other places, this is particularly focused on service industries, which could include finance, but also could be consulting or other types of activities. All of these different changes in the industry outlook define also a difference in emission outlook, in the emission build, which means that the emissions that are created within a certain geography come from different sources. This is where we see really clearly how tackling climate change is a highly local issue because it requires a local response to it. You cannot use the same tactics that you have used in this service-based economy as the one that is focused on. And then the final issue that I mentioned is about like how deeply embedded is a particular economy into the economies of other countries. If you look into some businesses, they are truly international. Let's take a supermarket chain that is based in Germany, the place where I live. You have here products in the supermarket that come from probably hundreds of countries. And in some cases, maybe they don't come from these countries, but they have been transported through these different countries so that they can get to the particular final destination that is somewhere in a shop in Germany. If you look into this, that means that Germany, with this big supermarket chain, is actually having to take into account emissions that come from all these different geographies, but they also have impact on all these different geographies where the farmers that make these bananas get to produce these bananas, where the packaging that happens maybe in a third country is being created because pollution from the packaging process is also being created. So it becomes all of a sudden this like complex chain that requires, again, for each and every single one of those complex companies as well to start untangling this. So if you take these three layers of complexity related to this global focus of climate change, the outcome is that we have to think in these different layers when we start thinking of how to act on climate change and be mindful that A, financing is not equal and it needs to become like really a lot more clear and vivid across the globe, because all of us are experiencing this on a global level and all of us are in one way or another, especially on the Western side, responsible for negative impact that is created on another side of the world. The second is like, what are the industries that build up a certain economy? How are they turning into sustainable activity or unsustainable activity and the opposite? What are the specific actions that need to be taken so that they're applicable to the local setup? And finally, think about how intertwined is this particular geography, business, so that that essentially also acts as a lever for creating a plan to act on climate change.
And something like climate change is obviously a problem which can't exist in isolation in certain geographies, right? It would eventually hit the whole Earth. So we can't really afford just to solve it in some parts of the world and leave others on their own. And also, it's such a big challenge that the citizens of the Earth cannot solve it on their own. There would have to be a lot of intervention from governments and centralized institutions. And I think they try to bring certain global standards where countries, big corporations have to adhere to. But what are some of those major standards that we are working towards?
So you're totally right that climate change is really truly interdependent issue that requires a lot of stakeholders to work together in order for it to be tackled, untangled. What I always say is that at the moment we are running multiple sprints and you have all these different stakeholders that act on different elements of their sustainability agenda. But what we need to get to is where we run a marathon, where all of us essentially are aligned and we take this like long-term approach to transform our economy and really make businesses, which are at the core of addressing climate change, sustainably minded, but also sustainably driven. The standards that are driving this agenda, for sure, is the first example, I would use the Paris Agreement targets. This was set in 2016 when essentially as part of one of the COPs, which is the annual meeting by the UN to discuss climate change related issues on a governmental level, but lately it has become a lot more driven by business thinking, was essentially established that we're going to have a unified goal to reduce with over 40% the emissions related to our economies all around the world. And all the countries around the world sign up for this decree, which made it quite of a special fundamental moment for anyone in this industry, because it essentially kicked off this first stage of alignment that was needed in order to allow for sustainability to become a common goal for all of us, regardless of where we're based, what businesses we do, what kind of industries do we come from. These agreements have set the standard for how we think about this topic, but then after them, there's been a lot of different other standards that have gained prominence. Science-based targets is another one. This is where you use science to essentially set targets for your business. This is quite of a crucial element to the sustainability agenda of many businesses. Only over the last few years, there's been hundreds of percent increase in companies signing up to commit to science-based targets, which is where you calculate your emissions, then you get a science-based target to be set for you, and then you commit to doing this with essentially a document you sign legally. There's been a lot of other more informal initiatives like Race to Zero. This was something that was initiated in COP26 by the organizers, the high-level champions, the people from the UN, to kick off again alignment on an industry level about how do we think about decarbonization. There was the Banking Alliance, there was the Asset Manager Alliance, there was the alliance related to fashion industry. So really thinking a bit more specifically on an industry level. And of course, like historically, we've had the SDGs, the science framework associated to calculating emissions, which is the GHG protocol. You have the Global Reporting Initiative, GRI. You have CDP, which is more of a private NGO that focuses on unifying understanding around supply chain reporting. A lot of different standards. I know that I threw a lot of different details there, but ultimately, all of them really crucial to push this same idea for all of us to be acting on climate change, still with a lot of work to be done on unifying the language and the KPIs.
I was going to say, what's key perhaps from this point onwards, making these different standards across different sectors, different parts of the world in alignment with each other to try to achieve the same goals in terms of KPIs to hit. 13 years ago, I was working for a corporate-backed startup. We were building renewable power plants, wind and solar. And we used to sell the carbon credits, which we were able to generate due to renewable energy generation in the voluntary carbon market. And then big emitters of carbon purchased these credits to offset their carbon emissions. So this market, it's called voluntary carbon market. I think it still is. Why don't we have a mandatory one? Why is it still voluntary?
There is a mandatory one, but it's only for the biggest polluting companies. And this is specifically focused on automotive, plastic producers, fossil fuel companies, where they have a certain allowance to be able to pollute. This, although, is only applicable to geographies like the EU, which means that elsewhere in the world, this negative impact can be distributed, which ultimately leads to the same outcome, which is a planet that is unhealthy and a planet that is continuing to essentially be dependent on a lot of, I would say, external choices that can be redistributed without necessarily with a different story to be told on the outside, but then in the inside, essentially it happens the same. Why is it not mandatory for everyone everywhere? It's because there's a lot of different steps that had to be taken for us to get to where we are. And I think we're still far away from having across the board internationally a true understanding of how severe the situation is, which is quite of a pity given the fact that there's never been more information out there about how severe climate change is and how much businesses are going to lose in terms of money. Only over the last year, there's been 300% increase in climate-related costs that had to be borne by insurance companies at most. And if you take this into account, that shows that our accounting systems anywhere in the world are not capable of accounting for this climate risk as part of the way they assess their financial risk, which means that we essentially don't have a true value for the cost that is ahead of us for our economy globally to prepare for this. So this is where probably there's an opportunity to think of why a mandatory carbon market would be necessary. There's been an increase in carbon prices that have been set across the world, but not all of them are mandatory. Not all of them are at the value that they should be. We're kind of averaging out at around $45-$50. So still a long way to go, but yeah. I would agree there's a necessity to have a mandatory one.
Absolutely. And I think this is a good segue to talk about Plan A, your company. How do you define Plan A in one sentence?
Plan A is a software as a service platform that enables businesses to become sustainable. We do this by using data that is available to the business to expose to them what are the biggest levers for them to reduce their emissions, to become more sustainable, to save money by becoming sustainable, and then help them report, because obviously reporting is quite of a crucial element to the sustainability agenda of any business today with all the new legislation that has come up.
What's the key product that attracts your customers?
What is the key product that attracts the customers? Well, the fact that they have a unified sustainability software. They have one single place where they can go and start seeing visibly their sustainability status quo, their opportunity for improvement, and finally, their opportunity for reporting can kind of alignment to legislation. Usually clients come to us because they're either in the beginning or somewhere in the middle of their sustainability journey. They have a lot of different stakeholders they want to align. They have a lot of data that they need to digest, but they really don't know how to prioritize all these different activities. And what we do for them is really take all of these different starting points that, of course, incredibly important, and give them an overview of what is the plan for them. How do they like go step by step into this decarbonization journey, into this compliance journey, so that they make sure that they're not wasting resources, they're saving money, and also they're able to successfully implement their sustainability plan.
How much of demand from your customers is driven by marketing PR needs versus their true focus on sustainability? It feels to me like there is a certain degree of FOMO in the way companies try to address their carbon footprint or more broadly environmental footprint.
We don't have the job to support someone on their sustainability communication agenda if they don't plan on taking action with that. We have been working with more than 1,000 businesses, and what happens always in the beginning of our engagement with them is really understanding the true needs that they have. And if the need is communication, then we're not the place for them to be starting their activities. Our focus is really on structuring the sustainability and ESG agenda of a business and giving really this foundation, this setup, this really clear structure to all the different steps that need to be taken. Managing sustainability in a business is very complex. It requires a lot of different steps to be taken. It requires a lot of different stakeholders to be managed. And usually, even if we're talking to the biggest companies like our clients, like BNP Paribas, Vattenfall, also Chloe, other companies, there is a lot of moving parts because a business is on their journey to become sustainable, but they need to align departments that are not even in sustainability so that they can achieve their own agenda. So with this in mind, like, we have a lot of steps before we can start communicating about sustainability, because obviously, you know, there's work to be done before you can start telling stories. So our job is a bit more focused on getting the actual work done. If this enables communication down the line, we're more than happy. And this is where we obviously are always at it with clients. For some, it takes maybe a few months to be able to communicate the first successes. For others, it takes a few years.
Measuring is one thing, but moving to the action stage takes some time. And also, it takes a bit of education, doesn't it? So some of your clients are on top of things. They know exactly what it is that they're trying to do, but some of them are in the very early stages of the sustainability journey. I'm sure you've seen a lot of these cases, but how surprising is it to them when they hear what they need to do to reduce or offset their footprint? Are they scared when they realize it's actually a huge undertaking?
I think what they're scared about is these hidden costs that they have not anticipated they would have to pay. So they are, of course, scared for not knowing how to tackle all of this. They are scared for having the challenge of sustainability not embedded in their strategy, which makes it very clear to them that they need to be taking action as soon as possible. We have not been in a situation where someone is about to start working with us and then goes away because they're like, oh, this is too much of a work, because they know that there's no way out. There's legislation related to reporting. There's a lot of costs that are hidden. And there's also a lot of stakeholders you need to engage in order to be successful at sustainability. So I think those that get to us and they come to us, they're the ones that have gone through the process of really understanding that there's no way for any business to become future-proof if they don't really take their chances on becoming a sustainability pioneer.
And once they measure the footprint, once you measure their footprint, and the next stage is taking actions, what type of projects are there? Some of these climate tech companies seem to fund projects in these gold standard pool, right? So it's not necessarily taking actual specific actions for that particular company for which you measure their carbon footprint or environmental footprint, but rather in exchange of that, funding projects in that pool. That felt a bit one-dimensional to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you're totally correct. And the truth is that Plan A as a company has not been focusing on offsetting and compensation purely because we have 1/3 of our team that is climate data scientists. And what they have been able to demonstrate with all their work before Plan A, but also within Plan A, is that sustainability truly for a business is solely decarbonization. There's compensation that can happen at the end of the journey because you cannot reduce all the emissions that you need to, but the actual action that needs to be taken is related to reducing emissions. So with this in mind, we really have this focus. And I think as in any industry, there's of course a lot of people that are jumping on the opportunity because sustainability is now cool and people want to work in the topic to find the quickest way in. And with this approach of focusing on offsetting, you have a kind of a more quicker way in because you just create the technology to connect the dots between a business and someone that sells these credits.
You have customers from different sectors at different sizes. The two examples that I was thinking, one is, let's say, a real estate developer building a skyscraper, which is more of one-off footprint within that development phase. And some others doing this on a daily basis, steel manufacturing facility. What type of institutions in your customer base are most sensitive to reducing their footprint? Some of these sectors are actually regulated, right? So they have to comply with certain standards. But in some others, it is, I guess, by choice. So who is most focused on taking actions in a sustainable manner?
I would say there's a few types of companies, but I wouldn't judge them on the industry, but more on the maturity related to sustainability. They are coming from all those sorts of sectors, and those that have understood that they need to focus on decarbonization and are willing to put the time, the resources into doing that are just more mature in understanding the risks associated to not doing so. But they come from finance, they come from automotive, they come from fashion, they come from utility. It really is, I would say, a universal choice that is being made. Those that prominent examples that we work with, fashion giant Gani, BMW, also companies that are starting to look into their portfolio of venture capital and private equity funds like Apax, Bliss, and others. So it really is across the board. It's not in particular for industries. I would say it's more who is further down in the maturity of the journey for sustainability.
And I guess the accuracy and effectiveness of a business like Plan A heavily depends on the amount of data and how good that data quality is. How do you manage to collect inputs from these massive organizations? You actually mentioned some very large names in your customer base. They have all these supply chains, massive employee workforce around the globe, perhaps. So how does it even work to collect all this data to a precise level?
Well, it really is dependent on a lot of different factors that we assess in the beginning of the engagement with a business. We assess the data quality that is available to the business. We assess the data gathering and also just storage maturity that the business would have. Are they using some systems for data storage and data management? Are they not? And also it's about how mature is the team related to this particular topic. And finally, what is the outcome that they want to achieve? This is always what we do in the beginning of our engagement with a business. And that gives us a really good overview of how we can tackle the issue of data. In some cases, what this ends up resulting in is that we do integration so that we automate the data collection from the different systems that the business has access to and is using. Other times, we have to connect the dot between suppliers in the business because they're predominantly reliant on data from suppliers in order to assess their own sustainability. Or there's other cases where we need to predict the values because the data is not even there. So it really depends on the business itself.
What's ahead for Plan A? So what's the most critical near-term goal to make the biggest impact on the long-term success of the company?
We have a lot of announcements coming up in September for any topic that you can think of related to team members, related to growth, related to geographical expansion. So stay tuned. I would say we're at the stage of the company where there's just so many moving blocks and so many exciting things that we need to take into account. So I wouldn't be able to just name one, but I am particularly excited about the people that have been joining Plan A because it has been absolutely incredible to attract such talent coming from some of the biggest Silicon Valley companies, coming also from all across the board in terms of domains, in science, in engineering, also in product, in sales. So it really is manifestation of all the different ideas that we've had, making sure that we're always aligned to this vision that we have and have the best resources on board to achieve it.
I also wanted to ask you about your story because it takes a huge interest, commitment, and passion to build a business like Plan A. What's your story coming into where you are right now?
There was a lot of serendipity that brought me where I am today. And I'm really grateful that it kind of prevailed because in 2016, there was definitely not a lot of interest in sustainability and climate change, ESG for businesses. And ultimately, I had to spend a lot of time educating myself, but then also preaching to people that were not necessarily interested. My journey starts in finance. I've always been in investment banking, in VC, then also in fintech. And I found myself really engaged with the sustainability and climate change topic in 2016 after a serendipitous trip to Morocco, where I was supposed to be surfing, but ended up cleaning beaches instead from plastic. And after this trip, I really found out that I had very little knowledge about a huge, clearly very potent issue that was going to impact our planet. It was already impacting our planet, but I wasn't aware of that. So I spent some time on the side of my job educating myself about the different issues. I spent some time speaking to a lot of people, built a data model that was looking into the worst performing environmental indicators and the money that were going into addressing them, and found out that there was very little engagement on this topic from businesses. There was very little knowledge out there. People were not taking this into account as a serious activity because it just wasn't made clear that it was going to impact so severely our economy, our society. And I decided to make it my job to focus on educating these audiences that were crucial to transform our economy, but also ultimately find a way to make this a topic that is accepted, normalized, because the bad thing that I learned from day one when I was learning about climate change was that climate change was not going anywhere. If we didn't decide that we were going to transform ourselves and also our whole economy, it was there to stay and it was only going to get worse. So we needed to accept that this existed, make it part of the day-to-day so that we start embedding these sustainability principles in the way we were doing business.
This has been such a great conversation. So thanks a lot for making time, but I'm not letting you go just yet. So I have this closing question that I ask everyone, and it is, what are you most curious about these days and what are you doing to learn more about it?
I'm curious these days about the psychology of transformation within a business. I think it's really critical for us to learn that change is something that is inevitable in a business, and living in the ways that the past has been managed and also past success has been achieved is really not applicable anymore. Today, we live in a world where nothing is going back to normal. We're just experiencing in the last few years how every single month, every single quarter is yet another set of experiences that we've never had as business makers, as also individuals. And I find it fascinating to be part of this transformation for businesses where you have to adapt to this constant change that is happening outside of you to then change yourself internally to reflect where the whole world is headed. So that's what I've been curious about. I'm reading books about this and also learning how the work that I do can be also contributing to this positive change.
And on that high note, thank you again for coming to the Curious Learners. It was great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.